Okay, picture this. It's July 26th, 1952. You're sitting in a movie theater in Buenos Aires. It's winter, it's humid, crowded. You're, eating popcorn, watching some light comedy, just trying to escape. And then suddenly the film just stops. The screen goes black.
Which is every moviegoer's nightmare,
Yeah.
right? But this was not a projector issue.
No, not at all. A voice comes over the speakers, just booming. The spiritual leader of the nation has entered immortality. Eva Perón is dead. And the room, it just erupts. You hear sobbing, screaming, just total hysteria.
It is such a powerful way to begin a story. And what's incredible is that's exactly how Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice start Evita. You get this huge wave of public mourning, the Requiem. It's heavy, it's
It's
reverent.
almost suffocating. But then, just as you're getting swept up in it all, you hear this record scratch. A guy walks on stage, lights a cigarette, and basically says to the audience, "What's all the fuss about?"
All right, that's G. He launches into, oh, what a circus. And you get this immediate whiplash between, sainthood and absolute cynicism. And that tension, that gap, that is exactly what we are unpacking today on the Deep Dive.
We are getting into Evita. And not just the Madonna movie you might have caught on TV. We've been through a whole stack of material production histories, biographies, musical analysis, even reviews from the brand new revival to figure out how a rock opera about an Argentine first lady became this global thing.
It's such a fascinating case study because this show, in a way, it invented the modern pop star politician. We're going to get into the black legend of Eva Perón. Was she a saint, or was she, as one biography called her, the woman with the whip?
And we are definitely going to talk about why singing this role is considered physically dangerous for an actress, like actually a risk to their voice. Plus, we've got details on that huge 2025 revival that just hit London, which completely flipped how we see the
Oh,
character.
yeah, that production really changed the whole conversation.
So let's dive in. The politics, the music, and the myth of Evita. Let's start with the origin, because looking at the sources, this show very nearly didn't happen.
Not at all. It's kind of a miracle it even exists.
Yeah.
When Tim Rice, the lyricist, first pitched the idea to Andrew Lloyd Webber, Lloyd Webber just turned him down flat.
That is just wild to think about. I mean, Evita is arguably their masterpiece. Why did he say no?
Well, the idea itself came from such a strange place. It wasn't some deep study of Latin American history. Tim Rice was just driving his car late one night in 1973, and he happened to catch the very, very end of a radio play about Eva Perón.
Just random radio show.
Totally random. But it sparked this memory from when he was a kid. Rice collected stamps.
Of course he did.
And he had these stamps from Argentina with Eva's face on them. He didn't know who she was. He just thought she looked like a movie star because she was on a government stamp. That combination of glamour and government, it just stuck with him. So he starts researching and realizes her life has this perfect tragic arc.
Sounds like a perfect musical. But Lloyd Webber wasn't convinced.
Nope. He wanted to do something lighter. He basically said, thanks, but no thanks, and went off to work with Allan Ayckbourn on a musical comedy called Jeeves.
Jeeves. Yeah, I don't feel like I see that one revived very often.
There's a good reason for that. It was a complete disaster, a critical and commercial flop. It opened and pretty much closed immediately. And honestly, we should all be thankful for that flop. Because after G's crashed and burned, Lloyd Webber came back to Rice, sort of with his tail between his legs, and said, okay, tell me more about this lady from Argentina.
Ah, so suddenly he was available and very interested in a hit.
Exactly. And once he looked at it, he got into the musical potential, the tangos, the Latin rhythms.
Yeah.
But they still had a huge problem. This was the mid-70s. You couldn't just tell a producer, hey, I want to write a musical about the wife of a fascist dictator.
Yeah, that's a tough pitch. It's a toe-tapping romp about totalitarianism.
Right. So they used a strategy they had already used for Jesus Christ Superstar, and it was brilliant. They just bypassed the theater system completely. They made a concept album first.
Okay, so explain that. What's the real difference between a cast album and a concept album?
A cast album is made after the show's a hit. A concept album is the pitch. They recorded the entire score in a studio in 1976, released it like a rock album, and got top session singers. Julie Covington sang Eva.
So the idea is the public gets hooked on the songs from the radio, and then the investors can see there's an audience for it.
Precisely. They proved the market was there before spending a single pound on a set or a costume. And Don't Cry for Me, Argentina, the version by Julie Covington, it went to number one in the UK charts before a single ticket to the show was ever sold.
That is such a smart move. So let's get into the story itself. If you're listening and you only know the movie, maybe, or just the main song, the show's structure is pretty unique. It's sung through.
Right, which gives it this relentless pace. Almost no spoken dialogue. It moves so fast. Act 1 covers, what, 12 years?
Mm-hmm.
From 1934 to 1946, we meet Eva as a teenager, just 15, desperate to get to Buenos Aires. She latches on to a tango singer, Agustin Magaldi.
Poor Magaldi.
She uses him to get to the city and then basically climbs the social ladder one man at a time.
Yeah.
That song, Good Night and Thank You, is just brutal.
It's so catchy, but the lyrics are savage. It's literally her breaking up with a guy while she's moving her stuff into the next guy's apartment.
It perfectly establishes her ambition, but also her ruthlessness. She finally meets Colonel Juan Perón at a charity concert for earthquake victims. And the show presents this not as a love story, but as a merger. They sing, I'd be surprisingly good for you. It's all about politics.
And watching this whole thing, judging her every move, is Che.
Who is the most critical device in the entire show.
Right. In the movie, that's Antonio Banderas. And he's sort of this handsome everyman, a bartender, a janitor. But looking at the notes from the original production, the character was way more specific.
Oh, much more. When Hal Prince, the director, got his hands on the script, he had this vision. He put the actor in a black beret, military fatigues, gave him a cigar. He made him Che Guevara.
Which historically makes absolutely no sense, right? Guevara and Eva Perón never even met.
Never. Politically, they would have despised each other. Eva was a populist, Che was a communist. But Hal Prince wasn't going for historical accuracy. He was creating a theatrical metaphor.
So it's the revolutionary versus the populist.
Exactly. It adds this incredible layer of political conflict. But you're right. Later productions, they mostly dropped that. The film and the 2006 revival made him an anonymous everyman again. The voice of the people saying, hang on a second, something doesn't add up here.
Speaking of things adding up, I love how the show visualizes the dry political stuff. Because staging a military coup in a musical sounds like it could be incredibly boring.
The art of the possible. This is pure stagecraft genius. Hal Prince staged Perón's entire rise to power as a game of musical chairs.
Like literal musical chairs.
Literal musical chairs. You've got these military generals marching around, and every time the music stops, one gets eliminated. Until only Juan Perón is left.
That's so smart. It shows the whole power struggle physically without a single boring line about backroom deals.
It's all you need. And it leads right into the Act 1 finale, A New Argentina, where Eva rallies the descamisados, the shirtless ones. And it is terrifying and thrilling all at once. It shows her power to whip up a frenzy.
And that frenzy is carried by the score, which, digging into it, is just all over the place. You've got Latin music, church music, actual rock and roll.
It's incredibly eclectic. Lloyd Webber uses genre to define the characters. The Requiem is classical, saintly. Buenos Aires is this driving Latin number for her ambition. And then you have the rock opera of, oh, what a circus, for Che's cynicism.
But for the actress playing Eva, singing that score is apparently a complete nightmare. I was reading what Patti LuPone said about it. She was the original Eva on Broadway, a total legend. And she talks about this part with just sheer horror.
She called it a vocal graveyard.
She said Lloyd Webber wrote the score in a soprano's passaggio. Can you break that down for us non-singers? What does that mean?
So think of your voice as having registers. You have your chest voice, your low, powerful, belting voice, and your head voice, high and light. The passaggio is the bridge between them. It's the break. It's the weakest, most vulnerable part of anyone's voice.
And that's where he put all the big notes.
That's where all the big, loud, emotional, belting notes sit. So to sing that music with power, night after night, you are basically screaming in the weakest part of your vocal range. LuPone said it was absolute terror.
Why would a composer do that? Was it just a mistake?
Some people argue it was intentional. That sound, that strain of a voice being pushed to its absolute limit, it sounds like desperation. It sounds like a woman fighting for her life. It works for the character, even if it wrecks the singer.
It's so tough that in London they actually started a precedent of having an alternate Eva, not an understudy, a scheduled alternate who did the matinees because the star couldn't physically do 8 shows a week.
It's an Olympic-level athletic feat.
And yet, out of this vocally punishing score comes one of the biggest pop hits ever.
Don't cry for me, Argentina. It makes no sense. I mean, think about what the song actually is. It's a speech from a dictator's wife on a balcony, basically telling the masses she loves them, even though she's dripping in jewels. It's manipulative gaslighting set to a gorgeous tune.
It's not exactly a love ballad.
Not at all. And yet it was a massive hit. The Carpenters covered it. Olivia Newton-John covered it. There was even a disco version. It became this standard you hear in elevators, totally removed from its original context.
The melody just completely won. But let's talk about that context, because one of the big criticisms of Evita is that it plays very, very fast and loose with the facts.
That's putting it mildly. The show has a very specific point of view. The main source Tim Rice used was a biography called The Woman with the Whip by Mary Main.
With a title like that, I'm guessing it wasn't a very positive portrayal.
It was a total hatchet job. Mary Main was writing in the 50s, and she was relying on interviews with anti-Peronists, you know, the wealthy elite who Eva despised and who despised her right back. So the musical basically adopts that narrative. It leans into what's called the black legend of Eva Peron.
Meaning that she was just purely a villain.
That she was, to use the show's implication, a whore who slept her way to the top, that she was vindictive, a fraud. The song And the Money Kept Rolling In heavily implies her foundation was just a money laundering scheme.
And the money kept rolling out.
Exactly. Now, more modern historians have challenged a lot of this. They point out that while the foundation's books were a mess, I mean, zero accounting, it did build hospitals, it did build schools. She was instrumental in giving women the right to vote in Argentina. The musical kind of glosses over the tangible good she did to focus on the scandal.
Now, what about the Rainbow Tour of Europe? The show makes it seem like a bit of a disaster.
That part is fairly accurate, actually. Spain loved her. There were millions in the streets. But the show really nailed the British reaction. The establishment completely snubbed her. The royal family refused to host her at Buckingham Palace.
That is the most British insult imaginable. You can come for tea, but at the country estate.
Exactly. She was furious and cut the trip short. The musical really captures that chip on her shoulder. She desperately wanted the approval of the elites she claimed to hate.
So we've got a show that's musically genius, historically biased, and vocally a nightmare. Let's talk about how it's looked over the years, because the staging tells its own story.
It really does. The original productions in the late 70s were very minimalist. A black stage, a big projection screen, and that scaffolded balcony. And, of course, the white dress.
The Christian Dior look.
Yes, that image became iconic. Then in 1996, you get the movie with Madonna.
Which was its own whole saga. I saw in the notes, before Madonna, there were talks of Meryl Streep, Liza Minnelli.
Oh, everybody was up for that role. And my favorite what if, they seriously considered Elton John to play Che.
That would have been a very different movie.
Can you imagine? But they got Alan Parker to direct, and he made some smart moves. They added the song You Must Love Me, which won an Oscar.
Yeah.
And they really softened Shay's character.
But I want to fast forward, because this show just keeps getting reinvented. Let's talk about the Jamie Lloyd revival that just hit the West End in 2025.
This was the biggest ticket in London. Lloyd is known for stripping musicals down, and he cast Rachel Zegler.
From West Side Story and the Snow White movie.
Her West End debut. And what he did with the staging for the big balcony scene, I mean, it's one of the most brilliant things I've ever heard of.
This is the part that blew my mind when I read about it.
Okay, so normally Don't Cry For Me, Argentina is sung from a fake balcony built on the stage. Jamie Lloyd had Rachel Zegler physically walk out of the theater building onto the actual exterior balcony of the London Palladium overlooking Argyle Street.
Wait, so she was singing to just random people on the street?
Yes, and they had cameras filming her live, projecting that footage onto a giant screen inside the theater for the paying audience. But the crowd on the street got to watch it for free.
Wow. That's so meta. It's creating the exact thing the show is about.
It completely contextualizes her life as political theater. You have the real crowd, the audience watching the screen. It just blurs the line between the performance of celebrity and the reality of power. It forces you to ask, who are we, the adoring crowd or the critical audience?
And what do they say about Zegler's performance?
The reviews are fantastic. They said she really captured the steel underneath the glamour. She wasn't playing Eva as a victim. She was playing her as a powerhouse.
It's so interesting how the show just keeps shifting with the times. In the 70s, it's about revolution. In the 90s, with Madonna, it's about celebrity. And now it feels like it's about the image, the projection of a self.
That's why it endures. It's not really about Argentina anymore. It's a story about a woman who willed herself into history. She just invented herself from nothing. And even if the methods were, you know, questionable, you can't deny the impact. She proved that if you play the part well enough, people will believe you.
Which brings us to the end of our deep dive. The show ends on a really somber, haunting note that I think is worth sitting with.
It really does. After Eva dies, Che tells the audience that a massive monument was supposed to be built for her, bigger than the Statue of Liberty. But then he says only the pedestal was completed, and Evita's body disappeared for 17 years.
That image. An empty pedestal. It's so powerful.
It is. And it leaves you with this question for today, right? In our age of influencers and political celebrities and people who are just famous for being famous, have we really learned anything from the story of Eva Perón? Or are we all still just cheering for whoever puts on the best show?
That is a thought to leave you with. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Evita.
Don't cry for us. We'll be back soon with another one.
See you next time.